Welcome to today's deep dive. We are so glad you are joining us. Today, we have our hands on a really fascinating internal strategy document from May of 2026.
Yeah, it is a fantastic read.
It really is. It's a blueprint prepared for a publication called The American Newspaper. And the whole mission of our deep dive today is to explore exactly how a modern media brand survives and actually thrives when basic information is completely free.
Right. It's about finding out what that strategic shift means for how you, the listener, consume knowledge every single day.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because consuming news today, it basically feels like trying to take a sip of water from a burst fire hydrant.
That's a very accurate way to put it.
You open your phone and you're instantly blasted in the face with this high-pressure stream of headlines, breaking alerts, social media threads, and automated summaries.
It's just a constant flood.
Right. If you are someone who is thirsty for knowledge, your fundamental problem in the modern world is not that you need more water. Your problem is that you desperately need a filter.
Exactly. And the authors of this strategy document, which is titled The New Price of News, Turning Clarity into a Media Business Strategy, they build their entire framework on that exact reality.
They validate the burst fire hydrant problem.
They absolutely do. They state that we have permanently moved out of an era of information scarcity. I mean, for over a century, the entire business model of journalism was predicated on finding facts that were difficult to uncover, writing them down, and selling access to those facts.
Because facts used to be hard to get.
Right. But today, the digital news market is saturated to the point of absolute information abundance.
Abundance might even be an understatement.
Seriously. If a major event happens, the basic facts are instantly commoditized. You get a push notification on your smartwatch, wire services blast it out, social media platforms surface it immediately.
And increasingly, AI systems are just generating a real-time, perfectly readable summary of the event within milliseconds.
Yes. So in an environment where information is literally everywhere for free, the document argues that the only true scarcity left in the market is judgment.
Judgment. Wow. And that completely breaks the traditional competitive basis of journalism, doesn't it?
It breaks it entirely.
Because if anyone with an internet connection can give you the basic facts for $0, you obviously can no longer charge a subscription fee for mere facts.
What's fascinating here is how radical of a psychological pivot this demands from a traditional newsroom.
How so?
Well, think about it. For generations, the core instinct of a reporter has been the race to be first. You know, you want to break the story before the competition.
Right, the whole we have a scoop mentality.
Exactly. But this strategy document tells the leadership at the American newspaper to abandon the race to be first entirely.
Just drop out of the race?
Completely. Instead, they need to join a completely different race, which is the race to be the most clear. The strongest media brands surviving today don't view themselves as selling articles anymore.
What are they selling then?
They are selling trust, authority, institutional access, and a very highly specific worldview. The product is not generic headlines. The product is what the authors call structured clarity.
Structured clarity. You know, I have to say, when I first read that, my immediate instinct was to push back a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Why is that?
I just thought, wait a minute, don't be serious. Professional readers still need to know what happened first before they can understand the complex strategy behind it.
It seems logical, sure.
Like, you can't explain the geopolitical fallout of an election if you don't actually report who won the election.
Right. The what has to precede the why.
Exactly. But, and this is where the document is so clever digging deeper into the text, the strategy actually anticipates this exact friction. It operates on the assumption that serious readers already get the what from somewhere else.
From Bloomberg terminals or automated alerts or just their professional networks.
Right. They don't need the American newspaper to tell them that an event occurred. They are coming to this specific publication for the so what.
Yes, exactly.
They know the Federal Reserve raised interest rates 5 minutes ago. Now they need to know what that actually means.
It is the fundamental difference between an alert and an interpretation. A standard news outlet gives you the alert, the rate hike happened.
And a publication dealing in structured clarity gives you the analysis.
Precisely. They explain how that specific rate hike will alter the lobbying strategies of mid-sized tech companies over the next 2 fiscal quarters, for example.
So the reader already has the data.
Right. They are paying for the translation of that data into actionable intelligence.
Okay, so shifting from selling facts to selling judgment makes total sense in theory. But it creates a massive practical hurdle.
Oh, huge one.
If you are a smaller, specialized outlet, You are entering a market where legacy media giants already exist.
Giants with century-old brand recognition.
Yes. Massive legal budgets, thousands of reporters on the ground globally. You cannot simply outpublish them. So this forces a really deep analysis of what those massive competitors are actually doing to find a highly specific niche that they are ignoring.
Because imitating the legacy giants is a guaranteed path to failure. You just can't match their scale or their technological infrastructure.
So how does the document break down the competition?
It runs through this rigorous competitive breakdown, and it strips away the illusion that legacy brands are just selling news. They look at The Guardian, for instance.
Okay, what is The Guardian actually selling?
The Guardian isn't simply monetizing daily British current events. They are monetizing a sense of civic trust and a very specific public interest mission.
Interesting.
The strategic lesson there is to borrow that incredible mission clarity, but actively avoid the kind of ideological predictability that can alienate professional readers, because those readers need objective analysis, not just a validation of their existing beliefs.
Right, that makes sense. Then you look at the New York Times, the strategy notes that the Times is essentially selling authority, culture, and this concept they call educated belonging.
Educated belonging. I love that term.
It's so accurate, isn't it? Being a daily reader of the Times is practically a lifestyle identifier. It's woven into your morning routine, from the front page down to the daily puzzles.
Absolutely.
So the takeaway for a smaller publication isn't to try and replicate their massive lifestyle bundle. You borrow their intense product discipline, you know, the specific mechanics of how they turn casual reading into a daily unbreakable habit.
Yes. Moving to the Washington Post, the analysis highlights that their core product is the intense scrutiny of Washington power and their proximity to government insiders.
So what's the lesson there?
The lesson is to adopt that structural analysis of how government functions, but avoid their broad ambition to cover every single political scandal or minor legislative debate. You basically borrow the lens, but you restrict the focus.
That brings us to the Wall Street Journal, which the document says is perhaps the most relevant analog.
Definitely. They sell pure, unadulterated decision advantage for capital readers.
Meaning their audience needs information to make money or protect assets.
Right. And you want to borrow that highly practical, decision-useful logic, but apply it to areas outside of just traditional finance.
Okay. So when you synthesize all those lessons, the mission clarity, the habit formation, the structural analysis, and the decision advantage you have to point that massive conceptual weapon at a specific target.
You need a niche.
Right. And the strategy concludes that the American newspaper must own a singular, highly focused analytical niche, which they define as explaining American power to domestic and international readers.
American power.
Now, I have to be honest. American power sounds like a phrase you'd hear in a slick marketing video.
It does sound a bit like corporate jargon at first.
Yeah. I initially wondered if this was just a fancy rebranding of U.S. politics. Like, is this just covering Capitol Hill with a more dramatic font?
It's a fair question.
But the distinction made in the text is absolutely critical here. Politics is just the elections. Politics is the horse race.
Who is up in the polls? Who made a gaffe at the debate?
Right. Who is arguing on cable news?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, politics is the theater. Power is the backstage.
Oh, I like that. The theater versus the backstage.
The strategy defines power as the actual grinding machinery of the country. It is how the appellate courts, the regulatory agencies, Wall Street capital, military logistics, media narratives, major donors, and obscure legal theories all interact to shape concrete outcomes.
So explaining American power means explaining why certain political choices are entirely removed from the table before a single vote is ever cast.
Exactly. It's understanding the money, the institutional leverage, and the hidden networks of influence. It's the difference between reporting that a bill passed and explaining the specific financial architecture that guaranteed its passage regardless of public opinion.
So you aren't taking a political side at all. You were just examining the raw mechanics of how the system operates.
Purely structural analysis. But, you know, defining a niche like American power in a boardroom is the easy part. A strategy remains a purely theoretical exercise until it hits the newsroom floor.
The execution is where it gets tough.
The profound challenge is execution. How do you force a newsroom full of journalists who are hardwired to chase breaking news to write about this day-to-day without accidentally sliding back into generic commodity news recaps?
And solve that, the strategy dictates a really ruthless editorial playbook. And the golden rule of this playbook is entirely about restraint.
The restraint.
Yes. Do not compete in the first hour of the news cycle. You intentionally leave the breaking news, the initial chaos, and the raw quotes to the wire services and the social platforms.
You just sit it out.
You sit it out. The American newspaper is instructed to own the second layer. They step in only when the dust settles. When the serious reader pauses and asks, okay, I know what happened, but what does this actually mean for my industry, my legal strategy, or my portfolio?
And to enforce that restraint, the authors introduce what they call the editorial test.
How does that work?
Before a reporter types a single word, the proposed piece must pass one binary test. Does this piece explain something about American power that ordinary news coverage does not make clear?
And if the answer is no,
the piece is killed.
Wow.
Even if it's the biggest trending topic on the internet, even if it could guarantee a million easy page views.
That is incredible discipline. And here's where it gets really interesting, because to guarantee they pass that test, they don't just tell writers to, you know, write smarter.
Right. That's too vague.
They replace the traditional chronological news article with highly specific, repeatable editorial formats. I actually think of these formats like different lenses on a professional camera.
That's a great analogy.
Like, you aren't changing the subject being photographed.
Yeah.
The event remains exactly the same. But by swapping out the lens, maybe putting on a legal lens or a financial lens, you reveal structural details that the naked eye completely misses.
Let's apply that to a real-world hypothetical to see the mechanism in action. Imagine a major tech CEO is called to testify before a hostile congressional committee.
Okay, classic news event.
The standard news article, the first layer, gives you the dramatic quotes. It tells you which senator yelled at the CEO and what the CEO said in defense. It captures the theater. But if you apply one of these new lenses, say the money trail format, the approach completely changes.
Right. A money trail piece might entirely ignore the dramatic quotes.
Yes.
Instead, the journalist maps out the lobbying dollars that the CEO's rival companies spent on the specific committee members who were doing the yelling.
Exactly. It connects capital, lobbying, and political outcomes to show the reader the underlying financial mechanics of the hearing.
It's designed specifically for business and investor readers who need to know how policy shifts are actually being manufactured.
Then you have the power map format. This one abandons the narrative of the hearing altogether and instead builds a literal map identifying the key personnel, the hidden networks, and the legal mechanisms behind closed doors.
So it shows you who actually drafted the questions the senators were reading.
Precisely. Or consider the strategic brief. This is highly tailored for professional readers, explaining the immediate market or geopolitical consequences of the CEO's testimony. It provides pure decision advantage, stripping away the noise to deliver actionable forecasts.
They also detail the institutional explainer format.
Oh, this one is vital.
It's fascinating because this format isn't even tied to the daily news cycle at all. It involves building an evergreen, highly detailed archive explaining exactly how an obscure federal agency or a complex antitrust statute actually functions.
It's built for the academic or the international diplomat or the corporate lawyer who needs the structural blueprint of the U.S. government, not just today's headlines.
And finally, the media power essay, which treats the media landscape itself as a lever of power.
Analyzing how narratives are formed.
Right. It analyzes how specific narratives about that tech CEO were created, amplified, and legitimized in the public sphere, treating the press not as an observer, but as an active participant in shaping power.
Maintaining the discipline to stick exclusively to these formats is what builds the brand identity. You are training your audience.
Right.
You are not giving them a random, unpredictable assortment of daily facts. You are teaching them to rely on you for a very specific type of high-level structural analysis.
But, and this is the big catch, implementing this level of discipline completely breaks the traditional media business model.
It does.
Producing a deeply researched money trail or a complex power map is incredibly expensive. You need seasoned subject matter experts, legal analysts, financial veterans doing the writing.
And it takes days, sometimes weeks, to produce.
Exactly. And if your strategy explicitly demands that you ignore casual traffic, ignore trending celebrity news, and ignore the first hour of a breaking story, you are never going to generate the massive millions of clicks volume required to survive on standard digital banner ads.
This raises an important question about the psychology of the modern consumer, which the strategy addresses head on. The fundamental premise of their revenue model is that audience quality matters infinitely more than audience size.
Quality over size.
You simply cannot fund premium intelligence with programmatic advertising aimed at casual scrollers. The target audience is narrow but highly lucrative. diplomats, academics, institutional investors, lawyers, policy professionals.
People who do not just want to read the news, but who actually require this specific information to do their jobs effectively.
Exactly.
Which completely flips how a media company operates.
Yeah.
I mean, for decades, the model was simple. Create broad content to attract eyeballs, and then sell those eyeballs to advertisers.
The old ad-based model.
Right. But the authors outline a shift from being an article site to becoming an intelligence brand. And when you look at the 7-stage revenue pipeline they propose, it doesn't look like a newspaper at all.
What does it look like to you?
It looks exactly like a B2B SaaS funnel. You know, software as a service.
That's a perfect analogy.
The journalism is no longer just content to wrap ads around. It is treated like high-end enterprise software.
And the psychology of that SaaS funnel is brilliant because it acknowledges that readers won't pay for something unless they trust it entirely.
So how does the funnel start?
The top of the funnel starts with free public essays. Now, this isn't about giving the product away for free. It's a sampling mechanism to prove the quality of your judgment and build search visibility.
So you get them in the door.
Right. Once you capture their attention, you move them to a flagship newsletter. You aren't asking for money yet. You are asking to become a habit. You are embedding your analysis into their morning routine.
And once that habit is formed, the friction to pay decreases. So you introduce the membership model for individual loyal readers.
That's stage three.
But that's just the consumer level. Where the SaaS analogy really solidifies is the transition into premium high-ticket products. You start selling in-depth premium reports, turning your newsroom's expertise into highly focused industry briefs.
Yes. Then you offer webinars and private, off-the-record briefings with your experts.
And what's the bottom of the funnel?
The ultimate goal, the very bottom of this funnel, is securing institutional B2B subscriptions. You are no longer selling a $10 monthly subscription to a single lawyer. You are selling a massive enterprise license to an entire multinational law firm or a foreign embassy. You offer them specialized intelligence archives that function as a long-term professional utility. A firm will eagerly pay for this because your structural analysis provides them with a measurable strategic advantage, literally saving them hundreds of hours of internal research.
So to get from a standard newsroom to an enterprise intelligence brand, the strategy lays out a very grounded 3-year roadmap.
It's a rigorous timeline.
Year one is strictly about identity formation. You aren't worrying about B2B sales yet. You are narrowing your coverage pillars strictly to American Power, Wall Street, war strategy, and law.
You publish fewer pieces, but the pieces are significantly stronger.
Right. Training the audience to expect those analytical camera lenses we talked about earlier.
Mm.
Then year two transitions into monetization testing. You launch the memberships, introduce the premium reports, and critically, you measure the audience's actual willingness to pay for specific types of analysis.
And year three is the aggressive expansion of the intelligence brand. You roll out the high-end services, the paid private briefings, and you scale those institutional enterprise licenses. You fully complete the metamorphosis from a daily newspaper into a specialized, indispensable information services business.
But it's not without risks, right?
No, the authors are incredibly clear-eyed about the existential threats to this timeline. And the single biggest danger they highlight is a concept called audience mismatch.
Audience mismatch.
This is a fascinating trap. It happens when a newsroom becomes addicted to the dopamine hit of broad vanity metrics.
Yes, the classic viral trap.
Imagine one of their free public essays happens to touch on a cultural flashpoint. It goes viral on social media. Suddenly, it's generating a million casual clicks.
Which feels great in the moment.
Right. And the natural, historic instinct of a newsroom is to pivot and write 5 more articles about that topic to keep the traffic flowing.
But for an intelligence brand, that viral traffic is a deeply misleading and dangerous signal.
Because they aren't your target audience. Exactly. If those million casual readers aren't corporate lawyers, geopolitical strategists, or institutional investors, if they are fundamentally never going to purchase a premium report or an enterprise license, then writing for them dilutes the brand.
You are spending really expensive editorial resources serving an audience that will never convert.
The discipline required to look at a massive spike in traffic and say, these aren't our people, ignore the trend, is immense. They must prioritize professional necessity over casual popularity every single day.
It requires an almost unnatural level of focus. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
We have covered a massive amount of ground exploring the inner workings of this media strategy today.
We really have.
We've seen the necessary pivot from chasing the first hour of the news cycle to rigorously analyzing the structural power beneath it, and we've examined how you take that high-level clarity and monetize it through an enterprise software funnel. So what does this all mean?
The overarching lesson is that in a hypersaturated market where information is infinitely abundant, clarity is no longer just a nice editorial virtue or a stylistic preference.
It's the product itself.
Clarity is the core product. A narrower scope of coverage, a stronger, more disciplined identity, and a focus on high-value professional readers that is the survival mechanism for media in the 21st century.
And as we wrap up, I want you to apply this framework to your own life. Think about your daily habits. I challenge you to audit your own media diet this week.
That's a great exercise.
When you open your phone and start scrolling, are you just passively consuming the first hour of news? Are you just drinking from that fire hydrant of basic facts, raw quotes, and immediate outrage? Or are you actively seeking out that second layer of interpretation?
Are you looking for the so what?
Exactly. Are you looking for the filter that takes the time to explain the hidden machinery, the money, and the power behind the headlines? Because ultimately, the quality of the filter you choose dictates how accurately you understand the world around you.
To leave you with one final thought to mull over, let's look at the horizon. The strategy explicitly notes that artificial intelligence is currently driving this massive era of information abundance.
Right. It's the engine generating those endless summaries.
Yes. Driving the cost of facts down to zero. But as these AI models become vastly more sophisticated over the next 5 to 10 years, we have to ask a really difficult question.
What's that?
Will AI eventually become capable of synthesizing the kind of structured clarity and nuanced strategic judgment that the American newspaper is staking its entire survival on?
Oh, wow.
Can a language model eventually map out hidden influence networks and write a perfect predictive power map? Or will human-curated judgment shaped by lived experience, source relationships, and institutional intuition remain the ultimate unautomatable luxury in the media landscape?
Man, if an algorithm can eventually automate high-level strategic judgment, the whole game changes all over again.
It certainly does.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Remember, the next time you feel overwhelmed by the absolute flood of daily news, you don't need to try and drink faster. You just need to find a better filter. We'll catch you next time.